This episode is brought to you by Simple. The simple truth is, you don't have to choose between effective skincare and irritation. As the UK's number one skincare brand, Simple Skincare penetrates deeper, replenishing skin from within for longer-lasting results. Their skin barrier cleansers use ceramide technology, giving you smoother skin without the harshness, transforming your skin in just 1 week. Try it today and feel the difference. Simple. Everything your skin needs, nothing it doesn't. See disclaimer on simple.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Peggy 3.
My name is John McEnroe. Welcome to Topspin 2K25. We're back and ready to take you on an incredible journey in the world of tennis. I'll be helping you play the greatest sport on earth. All players start here. There's no shortcut to becoming the greatest of all time. You know where to find me. I hope to see you there.
Topspin 2K25, available 26th of April. Rally on.
Lafondra looking to get courtside of Font. Lafondra away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello. Glad tidings. Well wishes. Merry Christmas. Reading FC picking up 3 points as Santa, well, nope, Andy Carroll and Tom Ince deliver as a win after Boxing Day. Today's podcast supported by Blue Collar Street Food, as always, hosting a New Year's Eve event in a couple of days' time. If you haven't got a ticket, get online and go and get one. I think it's £6 for entry, and you get a free drink included in that. That's a bargain on New Year's Eve in Central Reading. Cannot go wrong. Been joined to discuss our 3 points and victory by Paul Mann. Paul, how was your Christmas?
That's pretty good, actually. Spent it with mother-in-law in absolute filthy Thatcham, as we all know it. Yeah, it was all right. Not too bad. Ate too much, drank too much, and I will be continuing now until about January the 2nd on the same kind of pattern. How was yours, Alex?
You've got your dance foam finger as well. With
definitely.
If you do hear any chants from about 2012, those are probably coming from Paul at some point during the middle of the
podcast. Absolutely love the darts. Darts. Christmas is darts. Once the darts starts, it is officially Christmas. I mean, if you are a follower of the darts at the World Championship, at the greatest sporting event in the world, you will associate with what I'm saying.
And on the other end, got Matt Lansley. Matt, are you a darts fan or just a Christmas fan in general?
No, massive darts fan. Who doesn't like the darts? You know, this time of year, Christmas fixtures, you know, chance of 180, and it's magical. You know, I still need to get there though. I need to get to Ali Pali for the darts. I'm seeing more and more people on Twitter getting there, naming no names, and I just, yeah, we'll need to get a trip up there at some point, because yeah, it's nothing beats it this time of year.
That's Christmas 2023 sorted for Matt Lansley right there.
But how was yours, Alex? This is what we need to know.
Oh, my Christmas was good. I've seemed to have got a lot of shower gel for Christmas, as every year, and everybody seems to get shower gel.
I hope that's not a comment.
No, I don't know. I was a little bit worried, but yeah, just enjoyable time with family and watching a lot of football, and then getting to head down to the SCL Fortress, as it's now becoming known. Yesterday.
Fortress SCL. Yes. Yeah. It's got a nice ring. No, it doesn't.
Second in the home form table after yesterday, which is remarkable considering our terrible home record over the last few years. Let's discuss. Paul, we did make some changes yesterday. Tom Holmes was back in the lineup. Junior Hoylett came back in at right back. And Andy Carroll started up top with Yakimete. Thoughts on the lineup yesterday?
I think it's got to the point with Reading FC that you just think somehow we're just getting wins. I don't know how we're doing it at home sometimes, and you watch us and I'm not totally convinced, and not that really matters. It's all about the points. But when you see the lineup, I'm always a little bit sad when Lucas Jow isn't in there. It always makes me feel a little bit, oh, why aren't we playing him? But you got to say, Andy Carroll playing worked out, didn't it? I mean, he's got the goal. He's won us a penalty. If you're the manager, you say, I've made the right call.
Yeah, I guess if you're Paul Ince, that's probably the way you have to look at it, right? He did score. He did win a penalty. I think outside of those moments, which were clearly very big moments, how much did he contribute to the game? I would argue not necessarily that much. And my opinion is that him being on the field is just ends up with the two various styles of football that we're trying to play, and he doesn't really fit into either of them at the moment, which worries me.
I can't disagree with that, to be honest, but I've just been Christmas spirit there.
I can disagree with it personally. And I know me and Alex have had...
I'm a big fan here. This is like official fan club member.
Not an official fan club member, but I know... He's not a perfect player, you know. I think we all know Andy Carroll has his limitations, but I think just like yesterday, he seemed to be linking up the play. Well, actually, maybe not linking up the play, but I mean, like, it's almost like when he plays, he's going to win the flick-ons, and nobody actually gets on the end of him. You know, you need to have Tom Ince or somebody running onto them.
I don't think he is, though. I don't think he's winning the flick-ons anymore.
He wins quite a lot of them, I think. I think for me, say that he played poorly yesterday, I think would be. I know we'll go on to the game, but I think it's.
I don't think it's necessarily that Carroll plays poorly, but I just think he doesn't fit the way that we're trying to play. But it's a discussion for another time, because otherwise we'll spend an hour talking about Christmas carols and not actually talk about the rest of the football, because Reading
Ince pies.
Oh, that's
sorry,
bad.
sorry. I had to get that one in. Sorry, you mentioned Christmas carols. I had to get in an Ince pie. So.
Reading did have a pretty good start to the game, Matt. First 10 minutes, I think we were probably the better side for the first 10 or 15 minutes. A couple of corners won by Yakimete. I think he was very lively for the first 15 or 20 minutes, and he created the first chance for Andy Carroll with a quick counter-attack down the left-hand side, and the cross that he put in was a fantastic piece of footwork by him to somehow get the cross in. I have no idea how he managed it. And the header from Carroll was a good header, but it was always going to be a very tough chance because he's 12, 13 yards out and trying to put it past the keeper from that far.
Yeah, and he's kind of on his way back as well. He's kind of trying to angle his body backwards and flick the ball in the opposite direction. I mean, the fact he was able to get it on target, I think, was a good effort from Carroll by all accounts, I'd say. But I think for me, it was an interesting first 25 minutes for Yak, because I think he had some good moments, but then there was also some touches and kind of just that was just, I guess you get what you've got to take the rough with the green with Yakimete, because you know sometimes he's going to take a ridiculously heavy touch and almost put it out for a goal kick or a throw. But I mean, it's that one particular moment, it was a good. I mean, do you guys not agree with that? There's a lot of shaking the head with
no, Yakimete. I'm laughing at rough with the green still. Sorry. I've never heard rough with the green. I think it's rough with the smooth, Landry.
Oh, rough with the smooth.
I'll let that one go before Paul has a meltdown again. Yeah, I think Mete was very lively for the first 25 minutes. But as you say, you kind of get what you get with Yakimete. He'll have two or three really good touches, followed by two shockers. And the two really good touches do cancel out the bad ones. Swansea did come into it. There was a really good one-on-one, which Lumley made a save from. Paul, Lumley, I think he gets a lot of criticism still from people outside the club, especially from this expected shot saved stat, because he sits, I think it's bottom or second bottom of the table in this stat, and he gets a lot of criticism for it. But this was a decent save from a one-on-one.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. He's out quickly. He gets to the ball. I mean, Swansea a little bit fortunate the way the ball comes to him. The through ball's played to Perrin, and Holmes tries to clear it, slightly miskicks it. There's no nothing bad to put on Holmes there. He's in a really awkward position. It falls to the striker, and you'd probably say if that's a Reading player, you want him to score there. You desperately want him to score. He's hit it straight at him. But if the goalie isn't out as quick as he is there, he isn't going to save that. So, yeah, full credit to Lumley. And I did also notice that he then gave a volley of abuse to the Swansea player after he missed. And there's some of me that absolutely loves that. In fact, it's all of me. Every single part of my being loves that. Because it's what we need more in the team, isn't it? Is those absolute shithouses that kind of get those extra edge of psychology over players. Will it work every week? No, it won't. But Joe Lumley is a little bit Mate-ish, isn't he? He's going to do some fantastic things. And then you think, what are you doing there? You just have to accept that.
I think one of the biggest things as well with that save was actually the follow-up that he did to actually scoop it away from the foot. Because I mean, the first save's good. I mean, it's straight at him. Like say, if that's a Reading player, you desperately want him to score that. It's a big miss. But like the follow-up from him, the speed and pace to get out to the ball and, you know, a firm swipe away. I know it ends at the foot of a Swansea player, but I mean he's in a angle where, you know, he's not really ever going to score. So, you know, I think all credit to Lumley there. And like you say, I mean, it was a common theme with Lumley throughout the game. Seemingly, I don't know if he's got history with Swansea, but him and the Swansea fans were kind of going at it a lot of the time, him and the Swansea players. He had a couple of altercations.
You ask about history, but I think it might just be that Lumley just,
he loves it, doesn't he?
Let's be honest.
And we love him for it.
If he was playing for another team and he did that against us, I'd be fuming as well, because he seems to frustrate away fans every other week when we're playing at home and winning, because he time wastes and celebrates in front of the away fans and they don't like it. And I get why, but ultimately it's very funny to watch. So I hope he keeps doing it. We did get a free kick on the right-hand side a minute later. Good piece of skill from Yakimete to win the free kick. And ball gets crossed in from the right-hand side by Tom Ince, Paul. The punch out from the Swansea keeper here is not that good. Let's be honest. In fact, it's bad from the Swansea keeper. And it falls to Andy Carroll, who manages to score his foot. And I was trying to remember before we started recording, can't really remember Cal scoring with his foot, except for against Swansea last season.
No, he scored one late one about 6 or 7 weeks ago.
Of course, the one that Long crossed into him.
Yes, that's the one he scored. Yeah, I don't think he scored many others with his... the Swansea one, the away, was the only one. But yeah, the goalkeeper there, Ben, I mean, that's poor goalkeeping, isn't it? I mean, you can't say anything else but that. Could he have caught it? Possibly not. But the punch away has got to go much further than that, hasn't it? Or it's got to go at an angle, not right into the centre of the penalty area. I mean, I love it. It's perfect for us. And Carroll takes it well. Not a perfect strike, but he hits it hard enough, gets it on target, and that's all you can do there. I think Andy Carroll does well there because he thinks, pulls the defender into thinking that he's going to go attracted to the ball initially, but he just comes out and waits for that kind of drop of the ball and he takes it. So that's the moment you want from a player. I know we were talking about his link-up play earlier, and yeah, it doesn't help the team. I understand that completely. Lucas Jarrell's much better, but I don't know. You just got to accept he's going to rotate it, and it's what Ince wants to do. It's frustrating sometimes, I feel.
It was a good piece of movement by Carroll for the goal, I agree, because he does make the move to go into the 6-yard box and then pulls away just as the ball's coming in, which is completely what you wouldn't expect Andy Carroll to be doing when the ball's being crossed in. So it's a good piece of movement for him to kind of create that chance for himself, certainly.
I think the intelligence from him is brilliant on that. You know, I mean, it's like you guys said, the punch away is feeble, but I think he starts to back away the minute he can see that the ball isn't going to be headed. You know, you can see the keeper's coming for it, and he just positions himself in a good enough area with space around him. And I mean, you might say that he's lucky that, you know, the ball's come to him. You know, on another day, the keeper might be able to get a firm punch on that and it goes 20, 30 yards. But you know, the actual movement of him to pull away there is brilliant. And I mean, I think I sent that there's an even funnier, but there's a video online now from a vlog of a Swansea fan who thought the foul from Yakimete was never a foul. I mean, it was probably the biggest foul you probably see on the pitch on that day. How on earth they've come away thinking that wasn't a foul, I don't know, but I had to get that one in because it was
100% a foul. There's absolutely no debate.
He swipes away his legs.
It's not like a horrendous foul. It's not like a sending off or anything silly like that. But it's a foul. It's cynical, isn't it? He knows what he's doing completely.
Yeah. It's cynical. He knows what he's doing. And also, if you watch the video back of the celebration, I've only just noticed it. You can see the groundsman in the little, the access way in the corner of the stadium. And you see them all celebrating. It's lovely.
The one video that I did see of a Swansea fan yesterday was of, I can't remember the guy's name, but it's the same guy who had a whinge about Andy Carroll scoring at their place last season. And of course, his only comment is Andy Carroll again.
He scored, I think it's 8 in 14 against them, which, I mean, I know we talked about Andy Carroll coming back into the starting lineup, but I mean, if you've got a player that scores that much against a certain team, do you just play them anyway? Because I know it should never matter. It's a different team. It's a different time. But it's like, there's these weird things in football, right? Where some players, some teams, we've had it with Swansea for years. You know, we've only beaten them, twice now in 15 odd years, you know.
It's Andy Johnson for me. Always scored against Reading. Yeah.
So. Exactly. So it's like, you know, some players.
I do see your point, Matt. Do see your point. We did have a chance to make it 2-0 very, very quickly after, I think it was 2 minutes after the goal. The ball comes across from a corner. I think it's Junior Hoyland taking the corner. And as soon as the corner's taken, Andy Carroll goes down. I think this is a penalty pretty much every day of the week. I can't see why it would never be given as a penalty. The penalty itself was not very good. I think it's somewhere on the M4. Paul, I don't know where you think that Yakimete's penalties ended up, but it just was bad, wasn't it?
Bit of shit, wasn't it? I mean, it's just dreadful. We all love Yakimete, and he has scored penalties before, but as you pointed out before we started recording, he hasn't scored one for years now, Alex. I didn't realise that at all. But yeah, that was a really bad one.
And December 2019 was the last time he scored.
So okay. Yeah, that is a long time ago and much longer than I thought. I mean, I think most people in the stadium would be thinking, okay, so Carroll's going to take this now. He scored. He's won the penalty. A ridiculous pullback by Fulton as well. He's just panicked there slightly. But yeah. A terrible penalty. Unfortunately, it brings flashbacks of a certain penalty from a player who we're not going to talk about because it's still giving me trauma. But yeah, it wasn't good, was it, Matt? It was just abysmal.
How much has Yakimete paid you both to say that it wasn't just to finish it? It wasn't good. It was abysmal. I mean,
I don't know what more you want.
Actually, no, that. That's a fair point. Yeah, no, I've not seen a penalty be missed, but like, I mean, I know he shan't be named, did miss one by some distance, but I mean, this is in a different atmosphere. So, you know, that's up in orbit now, that penalty. It was dreadful. Like Paul Ince touched on it after the game on the penalty takers, didn't he? That kind of at the moment, it's just that he lets the players. We don't have a designated penalty taker. Paul Ince lets the players.
I was just looking, like while you two were speaking, at the records of other players who were playing last night at their penalty records. Andy Carroll has only ever taken 4 penalties in his whole career. So as much as everybody was saying, I expect Carroll to take, he doesn't take penalties.
But he scored his last one for us, or his only one.
His only one for us, yes. And then, but before that, his last penalty was 6 years ago.
Tom Ince takes penalties though, doesn't he, I think? Or is he... Is that another misconception?
And then Tom Ince hasn't taken a penalty since 2017. So
fair enough.
It's a difficult one because there just isn't a penalty taker in that team, particularly.
Not if Zhao's
have Lucas Zhao on the field, and probably Shane Long as well, I would have maybe put up there, but there isn't a designated penalty taker in that starting 11 from last week.
Would you rather them do what they're doing at the moment though, and just like actually just whoever's on the pitch, you know, whoever feels good? Because what was it? I think he said that, you know, Carroll was going to take it, but Yak said that he felt good, so Carroll let him take the ball and let him put it down. Would you rather just have a set penalty taker, or would you rather, you know, the player that feels up for it take it?
100%. I think you need to know who's going to take your penalties before the match starts, because if that's a specialist skill, isn't it? We've seen it repeatedly when we've had good penalty takers, and now Mate's been taking off penalties. Paul Ince was not impressed with that penalty at all, in the slightest.
I don't think anyone was, were they?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, who knows?
Basing it on feelings and vibes is not the way to try and pick your penalty taker. Like, you,
life's all about vibes.
You do it in training. You should know who the best penalty takers are in the team. Go with them. For all we know, Yaki Meite might be the best penalty taker in that starting 11 from last night. I really don't know, because we don't see any of the others take penalties particularly. But yeah, the penalty last night was appallingly bad.
You know what, though? I would have loved for Joe Lumley to have felt like he wanted to take the penalty, and then he'd come up and smash it home and celebrate in front of the away fans.
I'm there for that. I'm 100% in for that idea. It just would be so Joe Lumley, and he would go up to the away fans and just give it the old salute, wouldn't he?
He would give it the full salute, the full 9 yards. He'd knee slide. He'd do his old knees up celebration. And
I want to see that. But I mean, I think the most shocked by that miss last night was Yaku Meite, when you saw his face on Sky afterwards when he'd taken it.
I mean, he could not believe
what he'd done. Because the goalie dives really early as well.
The goalkeeper dies early. He sent him the wrong way. You know, he's just going straight down the middle. But I mean, like, I don't, like, in fairness to Meite, he's not going to strike a ball worse. Well, he's not going to strike a ball higher than that in his career, I don't think.
No, no, you know, it's one of those things.
He may do. We've seen Meite put some sky high efforts in the past.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah, talking of errors, the start of the second half, Russell Martin football comes and just absolutely kills Swansea here at the start of the second half, because I have no idea how this is seen as a good idea by those down in South Wales to try and play out from the back when you're under pressure like this. But Loom pressures the Swansea player. I don't know which Swansea player it is, but he pressures the Swansea player into giving up the ball early off a goal kick, Matt. Ince picks up the ball, and yes, it's deflected, but this is madness, surely, from a Swansea perspective.
It's crazy. And I think actually looking at reaction and comments from Swansea fans, it's a recurring theme, you know, conceding goals like this. I mean, how many times do we see, you know, rubbish like this under Stam? You know, I mean, like as I'm not going to go into it, but as you guys know, I've not been a fan of Russell Martin. I mean, even since he joined Swansea, since his Milton Keynes Dons days, I don't really think he's done anything as a manager. And yet he thinks he's, you know, the Pep Guardiola of the Championship just because his team can do 500 passes in a game. But like, we saw this as well at Hull, where the defender will pass to the keeper and then the keeper will walk out. What's the point? You know, like I don't know if I've missed something in maybe what teams are doing at the moment, but I mean, I don't know.
It's a really strange one because it straight away puts every other player on the field onside as well, which that means if you do
invite some pressure in as well,
you are immediately under pressure. I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't know why the goalkeeper doesn't play it to the defender to begin with if you're going to do that, but I'm not sure. It's the honest answer.
But, I mean, yeah, the pass to Joe Allen is just, I mean, it's ludicrous. I mean, like, to be fair, Loom deserves a lot of credit for being right on the ball and pressuring Joe Allen. You know, I mean, it was probably, I don't think Loom had that great of a game. You know, again, his passing, his touch was all astray again. But I mean, that one moment from him, it's the one thing he seems to do well is pressure players and use his physicality. And he did that well in that moment. And, you know, I mean, Ince picks it up and does really well. It's a good finish into the
corner. I can't get onto the subject of Loom's passing, because otherwise I might.
Yeah, let's avoid that one.
We've touched on it enough. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be, well, maybe on a bad game where we'll probably touch on it. But yeah, we've
it's a good finish by Ince, though, isn't it?
It's really good. And I think the good thing as well, he's scoring a bit more now. Ince, he's taking more shots, which is good. And you know, I mean, I guess, you know, everyone really knows his goal scoring pedigree that he's had in the past. You know, hopefully, you know, he'll start to pick that up again.
Yeah, I mean, he shoots, he's a little bit lucky with the deflection, isn't he? But it doesn't really matter, does it? Like you say, if he doesn't shoot,
make your own luck,
score there. And it's all about kind of like taking those opportunities. There was no one else he could pass to, And Carroll would have been offside, so he had no real option, and it'd be stupid not to shoot there. So, yet again, Tom Ince is miles ahead in the player of the season, isn't he? It's at the moment still, and we're in December. There's no one even near him. It's a matter of who's going to be runner-up now.
It's not even a contest. Like, I don't honestly, yeah. I'm not sure if there's any point in the club bothering to do a vote. Because let's be honest here. Everyone knows it's going to be Tom Ince.
Everyone thought this with Swift, right? And then it was Yandy Yedder.
It can change. It can change in the last few months.
Very, very. There's a lot of recency bias in those votes. Yeah.
We do have a tendency to like a goalkeeper and like a defender. Oh, yeah, and at this rate, Lumley. You know, Joe Lumley with his shithousery. Yeah. I mean, it'd be more a shithousery award. But I mean, I think everyone looks at the effort that Tom Ince puts in. I mean, like, nobody's put in the effort that Tom Ince puts in on a weekly basis since, you know, like the days of, I'd probably say like JB McEnough. He reminds me a lot of JB as well, because he's lost a bit of the pace now, Ince. You know, he doesn't have the blistering pace that he used to have, but he's still very good on the ball, runs his socks off, and he does his talking on the pitch.
JB was better.
He does a lot of talking on the pitch.
Shouting.
Guy after. And said, Tom moans a lot on the pitch. He's always moaning at other players, but the team let him do that because of all the effort he puts in.
Yeah, but like, I think you've got to sometimes have those leaders, right? I mean, and you know, it's all good having, you know, like Yedder and Yedder and Holmes at the back, but you've got to have a leader, you know, up the pitch. And I know it might be divisive amongst some people about how much that unsettles it. And maybe if you've gone on a bad run, you know, you might end up seeing a McShane and Danny Williams moment, which, you know, nobody really wants to, you know, see again. But I mean, you know, I think someone's got to, you know, take hold up there. And, you know, Ince, to be fair, he's leading by example with his performances. And, you know, if he wasn't putting the effort in, if he wasn't, you know, making the runs, if he wasn't doing the running himself, you know, you'd probably look at him and say, well, you can't really make those comments and look like a grumpy kid, you know, if you're not putting in the effort. But he is.
I know he's like the captain, Yedden, but for me, Tom Ince is our main player. He's the leader on the pitch, isn't he?
100%.
I don't think anyone could really argue with that one. I mean, sure, people will. But for me, he's the person. If he's on his game, he can lift the whole of the team. It doesn't always work, but you feel like he drives us on, not just in a positive sense, but it is positive still. The way defensively he pushes up and presses, I think, helps us so much.
Yeah. Well, and like we say time and time again, if Ince plays well, we win, you know, and the team plays well. So
after a very positive first 65 minutes yesterday and a very positive first 25 minutes of this podcast, we now get to move on to what was the most bizarre moment I can remember as from last night doing, which is bringing on Baba Rahman for Yaku Mate at 2-0 and moving to 2 up front. Why did we go from 5-4-1 and playing Carroll up front on his own to 5-3-2 and putting Tom McIntyre onto the left wing, which made absolutely zero sense, and then into central midfield? What is this substitution about? What is it meant to achieve? Like, I don't get it at all. It completely killed the game off for us, and we had zero attempts or zero even hope of holding onto the ball against Swansea after that, and all it became was attack against the fence, and it felt inevitable that Swansea were going to create chances.
Something has to be in Rahman's contract.
Substitution. I don't get it. I do not understand what Rahman coming on was meant to do.
Like something has to be in his contract, surely, about playing time. You know, we've heard it with what Bowen has said about, you know, they had to be, you know, clever with how they got players in. I mean, like I say, it's a bit nonsensical. I know Ince probably had in his mind, you know, the 3-2 turnaround earlier in the season, but I mean, taking Mate off and moving McIntyre into midfield. I mean, the defense at that point, Swansea came out actually at the start of the second half quite well, but the second goal killed it off. You know, they made a couple of subs. I think they made a triple sub at one point, didn't they? But like, you know, they weren't really getting anywhere. And, you know, Rahman isn't really the best defensively, to put it nicely. You know,
to me, it's not even the fact that it's Rahman who's come on, though. It's the move.
It's the switch.
It's the switch of formation from going from four in midfield to three in midfield. Against Swansea, who are this really high possession, you know, we're going to keep passing the ball kind of team, why are you taking a man out of the midfield? What's the logic?
I think Paul Ince saying after the match he could see the game that was down at the Liberty or whatever it was earlier this season coming back again. And I wonder how much in his head he tried to preempt that. And by him trying to preempt it, he's made the situation even worse. I don't know why he did that. There's no explanation why we were sitting back. We didn't have to go crazy or anything. We just needed to keep playing the way we were. And Swansea always going to have more possession than us. But it doesn't really matter if they don't have many chances. That's fine. But
I think the game, the Liberty, was a lot different.
Sometimes. Sometimes they work well. But last night was one of the worst. We got away with it, but it didn't help the team at all.
No. And I mean, it's like I said, I can't really see why. Well, I can see why Ince thought back to the game at the Liberty, because I mean, it's gone to 2-0 and you threw away 2-0 earlier, you know, in the season. But I mean, that game was totally different. I mean, Alex and I were there. I mean, they you know, we went up 2-0, but they got one back before half time. And pretty much once they got that back, you thought this is going to be an onslaught in the second half. You know, we're going to be struggling here.
It was also a very different game because of the fact that 2-0 lead that we took away when we were at Swansea was one of the most fortunate 2-0 leads, because they'd already created three or four really good chances before we even scored the first one or the second one. Whereas yesterday, maybe Swansea had one good chance in 65 minutes to score. They weren't creating chances at will. So to change the game to try and preempt something that Swansea were going to try and check, like, it didn't make sense. And it meant that Swansea just held onto the ball so much for the next 15 minutes or so, up until we changed the system again. And after 70 minutes, Swansea did actually finally get, you know, a cross in. And Perreault, good header from Perreault, really good save from Lumley this ball to push it onto the bar, but Cullen taps it home. And I mean, I've watched the replay of this. I think that it's really obvious that as soon as Babarama came on, Swansea started targeting the left-hand side and just putting crosses in between him and Saar. So it seemed inevitable that one was going to fall to Swansea.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're absolutely right there. But the marking was abysmal. I mean, was there any real marking there for that goal? I mean, first of all, the header for Perreault. I mean, like you say, fantastic save from Lumley. So a little bit unlucky the way the ball hit the post. If it's like a couple of inches, it will go out probably for a throw-in or a corner. But still, the follow-up is so slow on Cullen. I mean, Yedem does react, but it's way too late. And those are the little moments that could make a difference in a game when it's 1-0. But I don't know. I just find our defending from set pieces still, or any crosses into the box, worrying.
Deep crosses and set pieces from further out, just it feels like there's a real lack of communication. Matt, I mean, you mentioned it to me earlier on about the fact that it just doesn't feel like Rahman has done anything to alert Saar to the fact that there's someone behind him.
No.
And he's trying to cover two players on his own, like without any kind of like communication to the rest of the line. It doesn't make any sense. Saar, I can't really give a free pass to Saar, because ultimately, I think he should probably be aware that someone's running in behind him anyway. But it's both of them need to take quite a lot of culpability for that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think, you know, Bubba, Saar, and I think Yedem as well, I think, you know, share a lot of responsibility in the goal altogether. I mean, from the three of them, it's pretty pathetic, really.
And this, before you mention, doesn't even account for the fact that we haven't even mentioned the fact that Loom lost the ball on the edge of the area with a dreadful pass, chased the ball around for 20 seconds, put himself out of position, which meant that Swansea were able to get the cross in the first place.
Loom can't get off with that goal as well, because it's just another account. I mean, we've spoken about it 1,000 times already, his passing, but, you know, off number 103 or something of bad passes in the Saar book. But I mean, in fairness to Perreault, it's a really good run, because he actually holds off and he's outside of the box. There's probably like four or five people closer to the goal than he is when the ball actually is out on the left. But I mean, if you're Babarama, you know you've got a guy behind you you know, and to be fair, the back three is shifted quite far over towards the ball as well. I think Sarr is, you know, the left centre back, and he's almost on the on the penalty spot. You know, he's got to be further back over, because, like, you know, like to be fair, any header that, you know, comes in front of Rahman there, Rahman's never winning, because, you know, Perot's going to have the run on him. He's not going to be able to stop him. You know, he's got a player behind him as well. So, you know, by all accounts, Perot was Sarr's man there. But Yedlin's got to do not Yedlin, Rahman's got to do some communication there to Sarr to at least pull him a bit closer to him, you know, because Sarr is almost standing on the heels of Holmes, you know, so he's got to do something there to pull Sarr back, or just let him know that, you know, there's a bit of a gap here. You need to move back, because I've got a player behind me, and, you know, you've got Perot here who's unaccounted for. Everyone pretty much had a man there to cover, and nobody picked them up. You know, Lumley makes a great save, but then, you know, you've got the Count of Yeardham, who I can't even understand what Yeardham's doing. And I know it's harder for a defender to cover off, you know, a running on player, but Yeardham's got to do better at some point. You know, he's really got to follow in the man there and get a ball away. It's dreadful. Really.
Ultimately, cool. I think it's pretty disappointing from 3-4 players there, really. Yeah. I don't think Lumley comes away with any kind of like credit for the defending. And they scored, and the inevitability, which kind of like set upon the stadium for that, the final 20 minutes was Swansea are 100% going to get an equaliser and probably go on and win here. And you could not escape that in the crowd yesterday. They carried on pressuring, and I couldn't understand as soon as we conceded why we didn't make another sub. Like, why didn't Zhao come on at 70 minutes? He's probably our best player in terms of winning fouls high up the field. I would have loved to have seen Zhao come on for the final 20 minutes. Mbengue and Long come on at 80 minutes. Swansea haven't really created that many more big opportunities by that point. And they do keep pressuring for the final 20 minutes. And the biggest chance that Swansea get, I think, falls to Harry Darling, I think it is, in injury time. And it's from a free kick. And Paul, this is a really... another really big chance. And the shape in the last 20 minutes just kind of, it didn't fall to pieces necessarily, but it just looked like chaos.
Yeah, it was chaos. And Darling should score there. It's an absolute sitter, isn't it, really? If he heads that anywhere else, 2 yards either side of Lumley, and it's probably a goal because he's so close in. But he didn't. That's the only positive I can take out of that. Because it was shambolic defending. There's no one near him. The nearest player to him was Shane Long. And if that's a situation when you're defending a set piece in the 94th minute, something's gone seriously wrong. That's not a good scenario. But we take it. We move on. We then have Norwich away. I mean, it's going to be tough, isn't it? But I just want to...
And of course, Norwich have sacked Dean Smith.
Yeah,
inevitably, of course. Because I think what is that, the fifth manager that we've played this season, where they've sacked the managers just before we've played them?
Yeah, I think so. It's something I just want to go back to. Like, I think another reason why I was so nervous is in the crowd was our record against Swansea overall. Was it one win in 22 games we had against them?
I think it was just that game last season was the only one we've had since like 2005 or something stupid.
Let's be honest, that playoff final still haunts all of us. We can like try and forget about it, but it does. But actually, in the last couple of years, we've actually had a few couple of games which have damaged them. So I'm quite happy with that. But yeah, Norwich.
The Russell Martin effect.
It is indeed. You're absolutely right there. Your biggest, you love him. Absolutely love him.
Norwich, go and get him quick. We might get a win against you at the weekend then.
Yeah,
weekend on Friday.
Beat him twice in a week. That would be beautiful.
I will point out, if Norwich do get Russell Martin, we can just look at the end of the game last night, because Joe Lumley celebrated in front of the away fans. Russell Martin took quite a lot of exception to this. He was not impressed, was he?
It's just classic Russell Martin, that though. It's just throwing your toys out of the pram for no reason. And then he had a go at his players afterwards for the fact that none of his players had a problem with Lumley like celebrating at the end. And it's just like, give over, mate. You've got the ego of like a Jose Mourinho on steroids, and yet you're a crap championship manager. Just face it.
You've been Lumley'd. Get over it.
You've been lovely. Yeah,
this is what happened.
Podcast name right there.
Someone needs to find Joe Lumley on Cameo or Frills or whatever it was that Paul Lynch recorded his on and get Lumley to do that. And I'm sure someone will pony up a little fundraiser for that. Yeah, as Paul said, we've got Norwich on Friday, live on Red Button, I believe, Friday evening. Matt, it's difficult to get much of a score prediction, I think, because obviously Norwich are playing very inconsistently. Now I've sacked their manager. It genuinely feels like it could be any score on Friday.
And we're playing away from home. We've been positively abysmal away from home, really, this season. I think, have we got only one or two wins? Oh, is it three wins? Oh, as many as three. Oh, blimey. Yeah, so, I mean, let's get a number generator and pick out some numbers. 5-3 Reading. There you go. There's my prediction. Yeah. Who knows?
What's your random number generator say?
I'm going to go for 1-0. Why not? Yeah, because like we've all know, we're 23rd.
Boring number generator.
Table, so we're really bad away from home. But Norwich are not very good. But the Tossers have fucking sacked their manager, haven't they? Absolute shithouses, that's what I say.
I'm just going to go 4-1 to Norwich just because it could be any score and might as well predict us to lose. And that way I'll be pleased when we don't.
Let's just hope it's a positive result for the man household, because otherwise it might be a difficult night for Paul on Friday night. So all Reading players, do it for Paul, please.
Yeah, yeah, do it for me. Nobody else. Just think of my house in RG1. Just focus on that, lads.
Yeah,
put it up on the dressing room wall. Yeah.
We'll be back on Saturday with a review of the Norwich game and a review of 2022 as a whole. Can you believe a lot has happened this year? We'll be back on Saturday to review it all, but so much has happened since Derby on the 3rd of January or whatever it was, and we conceded in the last minute.
It's been a long year.
It's been a very long year. Jacob will be back at some point before the Norwich game with a preview, and we will speak to you all very, very soon. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Christmas. If you're off from work, have a lovely time off. If you're working, hope it's quiet. And that's all from me. I'll pass you to Paul because he's still got something to say.
Just want to finish with this. 180!